When Marcus Cicero was cast among men like Catiline and Clodius and Pompey and Crassus, some of them undisguised enemies and some doubtful friends, when he was tossed about in the storm that struck the state, he tried to hold it steady as it went to its doom. But at last he was swept away. He had neither peace in prosperity nor patience in adversity. And how often does he curse that very consulship, which he had praised without ceasing, though not without good reason. What woeful words he uses in a letter to Atticus, when the elder Pompey had been conquered, and his son was still trying to revive his defeated forces in Spain. "Do you want to know," he said, "what I am doing here? I am staying a semi-prisoner in my Tusculan villa." He then goes on to bewail his former life, to complain of the present, and to despair of the future. Cicero called himself a semi-prisoner, but really and truly the wise man will never go so far as to use such an abject term. He will never be a semi-prisoner, but will always enjoy freedom which is solid and complete, at liberty to be his own master, and higher than all others. For what can be above the man who is above fortune? Drusus, a bold and vigorous man, had proposed laws which renewed the evil policy of the Gracchi, and he was supported by a huge crowd from all over Italy. But he could see no successful outcome for his measures, which he could neither carry through nor abandon once embarked upon, and he is said to have cursed the turbulent life he had always lived, saying that he alone had never had a holiday even as a child. For while still a ward and dressed as a youth, he ventured to speak to a jury in favor of some accused men and to acquire influence in the law courts, with so much effect that, as we all know, he forced certain verdicts favorable to his clients, to which lengths would so precocious and ambitious not go. You might have known that such premature boldness would result in terrible trouble, both public and private. So he was too late in complaining that he had never had a holiday, since from his boyhood he had been a serious troublemaker in the forum. It is uncertain whether he died by his own hand, for he collapsed after receiving a sudden wound in the groin, some people doubting whether his death was self-inflicted, but no one doubting that it was timely. It would be superfluous to mention any more who, though seeming to others the happiest of mortals, themselves bore true witness against themselves by their expressed hatred of every action of their lives. Yet they did not change themselves or anyone else by these complaints, for after their explosion of words, their feelings reverted to normal. Assuredly, your lives, even if they last more than 1,000 years, will shrink into the tiniest span. Those vices will swallow up any space of time. The actual time you have, which reason can prolong, though it naturally passes quickly, inevitably escapes you rapidly, for you do not grasp it or hold it back or try to delay that swiftest of all things, but you let it slip away as though it were something superfluous and replaceable. But among the worst offenders, I count those who spend all their time in drinking and lust, for these are the worst preoccupations of all. Other people, even if they are possessed by an illusory semblance of glory, suffer from a respectable delusion. You can give me a list of miserly men, or hot-tempered men, who indulge in unjust hatreds or wars, but they are all sinning in a more manly way. It is those who are on a headlong course of gluttony and lust who are stained with dishonor. Examine how all these people spend their time, how long they devote to their accounts, to laying traps for others, or fearing those laid for themselves, to paying court to others, or being courted themselves, to giving or receiving bail, to banquets. You will see how their activities, good or bad, do not give them even time to breathe. Finally, it is generally agreed that no activity can be successfully pursued by an individual who is preoccupied, not rhetoric or liberal studies, since the mind when distracted absorbs nothing deeply, but rejects everything which is, so to speak, crammed into it. Living is the least important activity of the preoccupied man, yet there is nothing which is harder to learn. There are many instructors in the other arts to be found everywhere. Indeed, some of these arts mere boys have grasped so thoroughly that they can even teach them. But learning how to live takes a whole life, and, which may surprise you more, it takes a whole life to learn how to die. So many of the finest men have put aside all their encumbrances, renouncing riches and business and pleasure, and made it their one aim, up to the end of their lives, to know how to live. Yet most of these have died confessing that they did not yet know. Still less can those others know. Believe me, it is the sign of a great man, and one who is above human error, not to allow his time to be frittered away. He has the longest possible life, simply because whatever time was available, he devoted entirely to himself. None of it lay fallow and neglected, none of it under another's control. For being an extremely thrifty guardian of his time, he never found anything for which it was worth exchanging. So he had enough time. But those into whose lives the public have made great inroads inevitably have too little.